5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Yes, it's gonna be a cold, lonely summer, but I'll fill the emptiness. I'll send you all my dreams every day in a letter, sealed with a kiss. I'll see you in the sunlight. I'll hear your voice everywhere. I'll run to tenderly hold you, but darling, you won't be there. I don't want to say goodbye for the summer.
All right, enough. Brian Hyland.
Pressing way to start the show.
No eyes are rolling. Golly.
It's a beautiful day, and you start with this.
Beautiful day, yeah. Where did you get that kill myself song?
Use it to slit your wrist by.
Really? So here's the question that we're going to start with today. 8 minutes after 10 o'clock on this Wednesday, June the 10th, hump day. Beautiful day. Going to be a hot one out there. Scorcher. But the big issue is, as we start the heated up process that traditionally is more crime ridden than other times of year, why no black cops? Let me start this, and you see the tableaus, you know where I'm coming from and where I'm going to. But I want to relate something that happened a couple of years ago. I was at the El Museo del Barrio, that fine Hispanic themed museum on Museum Row there, Upper Fifth Avenue. And it was a commemoration of the contribution of activist groups like the one I represented back in the old days, the Puerto Rican Young Lords, and what they contributed to empowering the city's minorities. And one of the speakers was Felipe Luciana. I've mentioned this before. He's one of my clients. I had not spoken to him for a while before I saw him on stage at this event. He now is the spokesman, I said this yesterday, for the Newark Mayor Ross Baraka. Then he was a Manhattan-based, a fiery community activist, always on the fringes of New York City government one way or another after his initial career as a young lord, as a community activist, some say as a troublemaker. But he's a client of mine and a very effective speaker. Excuse me. So Felipe made a couple of points that night involving the burden of criminal records that young black and brown men often carry from their childhoods. Now, Felipe making the point during his speech that he was an ex-con himself, and like so many others, was therefore excluded from most city jobs. He's a convicted ex-felon, I mean, from his teenage years. So Felipe went on passionately to blame stop and frisk specifically for wrecking the chances of so many young black men to come up the social economic ladder by becoming cops or firemen, but specifically cops, because of the stop and frisk bust for pot possession and other minor offenses. Now, I remember that night, although Felipe and I, as I said, had not spoken for a while, I remember my old client's remarks making an impression on me because I had always focused on the short-term benefits from the program in reducing street crime, saving young black and brown lives as a result. And I have to confess, really thought through the long-term consequences of stop and frisk, and by extension, the whole broken windows theory of policing. In Felipe's words, a kid being banned for life from some of these jobs because he got rousted by a cop who found a couple of joints. So that revelation was reinforced sometime after that by the various anti-stop and frisk demonstrations that that came later, including that huge one I've mentioned before that Reverend Sharpton led down Fifth Avenue to Mayor Bloomberg's townhouse on the Upper East Side protesting stop and frisk. So what followed, and this is, I think, something that is often looked over or minimized, what followed all of those protests was the moderation of stop and frisk in the last 2 years of Mayor Bloomberg and Police Commissioner Ray Kelly. You have to give credit where credit is due. It worked. They started moderating it in the face of the lawsuits and the street protests and the judge, apparently Judge Scheinlin, leaning against the constitutionality of stop and frisk as it was being applied by the NYPD. So anyway, they started moderating stop and frisk. But the whole question of the program and whether it had taken a toll on the pool of potential police recruits has come steaming back big time yesterday with this interview that a police commissioner, the current commissioner, Bill Bratton, gave to a British newspaper, in which the commish is quoted as blaming those stop and frisk related criminal records coming from the Bloomberg and Kelly administration for the fact that there is a relative scarcity of black cops, relative scarcity of black police recruits. Here's some quotes from Bratton, and you tell me what you think of them at 866-RALDO. We have a significant population gap among African-American males because so many of them have spent time in jail, and as such, we can't hire them. And then Bratton goes on. The unfortunate consequences of stop, question, and frisk resulted in many black and Latino men getting busted and having records. As a result, the population pool of minority candidates, especially blacks, is much smaller than it might ordinarily have been. So you should know this, ladies and gentlemen, that blacks represent 23% of New York City's population, but just 16% of the NYPD. And even though the black neighborhoods and black young people are disproportionately involved, unfortunately, on the other side, on the bad side of the criminal justice system, you would think we needed more black cops on the other side of the criminal justice system to deal with what was going on. So 23% of the population, blacks are, 16% of the NYPD. Whites are 33% of the city. Just 33%, which is shocking to me, given all this gigantic diversity we have here. But black whites are just 33% of the city, but whites, 33% of the city, 54% of the department. Hispanics are kind of level as they fall right in the middle of all these things. They make up 28% of the city. So Hispanics now outnumber blacks percentage-wise in the city. They make up 28% of the city, 24% of the department, of the police force. So 24% of the police force is Hispanic, just 16% of the police force is black, 54% of the NYPD is white. So later on Tuesday, when reporters started reacting to the commissioner's remarks about stop and frisk being responsible for criminal records and therefore less black police recruits, you really got some outrage heated up. The commissioner didn't deny saying what he said to the British newspaper. He said it was out of context. So he goes on to say, you know, in the supplemental interviews, it's an unfortunate fact that in the male black population, a very significant percentage of them, more so than whites and other minority candidates, because of convictions, prison records, are never going to be hired by a police department. That's a reality. That's not a byproduct of stop and frisk. So he's trying to get away from blaming stop and frisk specifically. But he goes on to point out 15 to 20% of black males have some type of criminal history, and that's an issue of great concern to the black community. So first of all, I want to say that put aside stop, question, and frisk, that statistic, 15 to 20% of black males in New York have some type of criminal history, that's a devastating indictment right there. I mean, that's kind of a, that's a crazy, crazy number. That's one in five have a criminal record. That's ridiculous. It's an indictment, but of what and of whom? So the question is, do you believe that the reason we don't have enough black cops is because of black young men having police records? We're going to talk to various people on this issue, including you. What do you think? Why do we have so few black cops? Is it because of stop, question, and frisk? Is it because of the unfairness of that? Let me take one question before the break. I'll take or comment. Lou from Brooklyn. What do you think of Lou?
Hey, Geraldo, how you doing? You know, I'm a Puerto Rican detective, grew up in Brooklyn, and it's not, you know, the public's being misinformed. It's not if you were arrested or stopped, questioned, and frisked. You know, I've been arrested for graffiti as a kid, and it's conviction. It's not if you've been stopped by the cops or had handcuffs on you. The actual application process is if you've been convicted of a felony. It's not if you've been stopped, if you have summons.
So wait a second, Lou. Are you saying that the commissioner is wrong with his emphasis and he's being defensive and blaming the wrong thing?
110%. Because I'm a Puerto Rican from Brooklyn that didn't grow up with a rich family, considered a minority, and guess what? I made it.
Well, congratulations to you. Let me just ask you this. Do you have any college?
No, I do not, sir.
So was that waived for you? I thought they used to have a two-year college.
I served my country 4 years in the Marine Corps.
God bless you. God bless you. That says it all. I'm telling you, we like you very much, and I appreciate your call.
It's just a shame that they almost the politicians, we're not cops. We're not going to turn our eye for these crimes.
Say that one more time.
Cops, we're not going to turn a blind eye for these crimes. For any group, white, black, Spanish, if you're committing a crime, then don't feel bad when you can't get a job.
Lou, thanks for the call. What do you think?
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Why aren't there more black New York City policemen? The theory being that a more diverse police force would be more sensitive to the issues of the community, would reduce tension between the minority community and the NYPD. Bill Bratton, the commissioner, made remarks to a British newspaper being interpreted as blaming Bloomberg and Kelly for harsh stop and frisk, leading to the people being swept up in those stops, to them having criminal records, which is why we have no or a disproportionately small number of blacks on the NYPD. 23% of New York City's population are African American. Just 16% of the NYPD is black. Why? What's going on? Who's to blame? Is it the other guy, the old guys like the Democrats now blame everything happening with ISIS in Iraq on what George W. Bush did back in 2003? Is whatever's happening in terms of the lack of diversity on the NYPD today a function of what Mike Bloomberg and Ray Kelly did during the good old days when they ran City Hall and the Big Apple? Here's Junior in Brooklyn. What's up, Junior?
Hey, how you doing?
Was it JR?
That's fine.
All right. So what's up? Who are you? And tell us what's on your mind.
My name's JR. I'm from Brooklyn. I'm a detective on the job as well as your first caller.
All right. Thanks for calling.
I just wanted to follow up on what he said as well, too, just a little bit, that just because you were stopped or stopped, questioned, or frisked, or you had handcuffs on you, that doesn't lead to a conviction. That doesn't mean that the NYPD won't hire you.
So what you're thinking, JR, is that a criminal is a criminal, and that's why the NYPD doesn't hire someone. It's not a question of how you got to be a person with a criminal record. It's really about the crime you committed.
It's about the severity of the crime you committed. Do you know what I mean? If you're convicted of a felony, you know, you also have to remember that the police department, you have access to a number. Unfortunately, you're placed in positions where you can become a corrupt, or you have, You find yourself crimes of opportunity even as a police officer. But with that being said, the police department is much more diverse than just black and white. And unfortunately, that's the picture that's being painted, and it's not fair to Spanish or, say, Russian or Middle Eastern or people from
Asian.
Other races.
I don't know what the Asian component is. Well, I guess I could figure it. Let's see. The blacks are 16%. I'm just going to add this up. Hispanics are 24%. So it's 16 and 24. All right, that's 40. Then whites are 54. So that's 94% are black, Spanish, or white. So that leaves 6% for Asian and other. But why do Hispanics fare so much better than blacks in terms of the NYPD, in terms of percentages?
I believe there's a social stigma attached to being a police officer if you grew up in a predominantly black neighborhood.
Interesting. So you think that the cops are so shunned that it's a profession that's scorned?
Absolutely. You're immediately viewed as the enemy.
So I don't know what your ethnic background is, but
I'm a typical Irish detective.
Are you the son of a cop?
No, I'm the only one in my family. I have almost zero connection to the police department prior to me joining.
My in-laws are Scotch-Irish cops, mostly.
At one point, the Irish were cookie cutter.
I mean, not my in-laws, officers. My son's in-laws, I should say, Cruz's in-laws.
But there's a stigma with the old Irish cops standing on the corner swinging a stick.
So is that why? Is it hard to be a cop if you're a black man because the cops are not particularly popular in your neighborhood? I don't know. Is that what's going on? How do we fix this? How do we make the police department, which is the most diverse in the nation, even more representative of the city's population? Is that necessary?
77 WABC
is part of the problem in terms of the relationship between the minority community and the NYPD. The fact that, for example, African-Americans are underrepresented on the NYPD, just 16% of the force, while the black population of the city is 23%, whites 33% of the city, 54% of the department, Hispanics 28% of the city, 24% of the police force. What's going on? Is it because of stop and frisk? Is it because so many young black men, in the police commissioner Bill Bratton's words, has spent time behind bars, so many getting busted, having records? Is that why? And it's also, the commissioner goes on to say, we're certain the disfavor and the antagonism in the black community toward the police is a principal factor in why so few black men want to become police officers. There, the commissioner said it. Okay, what does Tom say? Tom, welcome aboard. Thanks for calling. 866, Geraldo, what's on your mind, buddy?
Well, how are you doing, Geraldo? It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Same here.
I'm currently going through the police application process, and one of the things I wanted to point out to listeners, adding to some of your previous callers said, is that I would say when I went through, when my number was called, the majority of the applicants who were there were white males, probably aged 21 to 30, and then there was other minorities, Asian, Hispanic. What that tells me, they offer the test, I'd say 6 days a week, if I understand now correctly. And so they've made it much easier for minorities to get on the department. So the question is, how many of them are actually taking the test? What are the attitudes in the communities? Are they considered, as we know, a lot of these communities, they frown upon police. Would they be seen as, I don't like to use the term, but maybe a sellout? These are some of the other questions
Uncle
that
Tom.
Need to be raised. What's that?
Uncle Tom is the one I remember most.
Yeah.
So what, did you talk to any of the minorities that were there with you, Tom? First of all, congratulations on your pursuit. I wish you the best. But did you talk to anybody there?
Well, you know, a lot of the guys I talked to were just guys who might have been next to me. So one of the fellows I spoke to was an Asian fellow. When we were going through the processing, a lot of the officers who were doing the processing represented various minority communities. So, like I said, I think it's more along the lines that they just are not taking the opportunity to take the test, or, you know, we don't know if they have the qualifications to take the test. So, like touching on what the previous caller said, I don't really think it has so much to do with any type of arrests or anything like that. Naturally, you're going to go through a background investigation, so these things will get flagged. I don't think it's really as black and white, no pun intended, as what the commissioner is saying.
All right, Tom, I appreciate that. Good luck with your career. Call us when you're a cop. I'd love to see how you're faring as a rookie out there.
We'll do. 35-year-old rookie.
A 35-year-old rookie. No, it's never too late to start over. All right,
that's
thanks,
right.
Brother. On Rikers, Ray's there. What's up, Ray?
What's up, brother? How are you?
Thanks
how you
for calling.
Today? Listen, Brian is a hypocrite. How dare he? He's got the most diverse police force in the nation, perhaps in the world. The bottom line is, just like that gentleman just said, everyone has the opportunity to take the written test. If you have a background, guess what? Don't take the test. It's going to pop up. SQF has nothing to do with it. If I'm a cop on the street and I stop 10, some suspects, let's say, hypothetically, and nine of them have nothing, they go about their business. They don't have a record. That one guy with a gun, he's got a felony. Guess what? You can't be a cop. Come on. Enough.
So just spell out what you're saying here. So you say the blame's on the applicant, not the commission.
Yeah, absolutely. You know if you have a record or not. You know, it's got nothing to do with him pointing the finger at Kelly and Bloomberg. Listen, the bottom line is, listen, I could point the finger at him and de Blasio. City's out of control. There's no one to blame. Listen, you took the job. You know, you knew what you signed up for. And now the horse is out the stable. Now it's just not coming back.
All right. I got it, Ray. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And Whitestone, Bobby's on the line. What's up, Bobby?
Here's one of the problems. Too many of the cops are coming from Long Island. You're a Long Island guy.
Yeah, I know. And a lot of my high school,
yep.
I only had 25% college, which was stunningly low. And most of
you graduated when? About 1942?
Close enough. 61. But many of my friends became cops.
Okay, fine. But here's the other point, too.
Mostly cops.
Okay, a lot of coming from Long Island. How many of that? Long Island's majority white, okay? And then you look at it. And what's the graduation rate for blacks in New York City's public schools, high schools?
That's a good, I'll look it up,
okay.
I don't know.
And it's pretty low, it's about like, you know, 65%.
You look up.
And then, how many are going to get 60 credits in college? You need 2 years in college now.
So did you go, are you on the job?
What? No, I was years ago.
And did you have college?
Yeah, I have a master's degree.
Wow, so I don't think college was a requirement back then.
No, it wasn't. It was no requirement, high school diploma. And if you served in the military, you got extra points. If you had a degree, you got extra points. If you had a father or an uncle who was on a job, you know, you get, okay, you're in.
You're in, yeah, you got the best track.
It was nepotism, but guess what? It worked for a while.
It worked for a while. Now I don't know if those days, I mean, I love that there's a tradition in families.
At the fire department, it's even worse than the police department.
The fire department, everybody's related to everybody. All right,
Bobby. Anyway, you take it easy, guys.
All right, man, thanks for the call. In Lakewood, Barry, what's up, Barry? What are you thinking about?
Yeah, I was just wanting to mention that if you look at the Baltimore Police Department, they have like a 60% black
department. Right, true.
And the older violence and the...
I think that's very fair to point out. In Baltimore, you have a police department where you have an African-American police commissioner. You have an African-American prosecutor. And, you know, you've got a city now where the police department is being... You know, remarked on as someone who did, the department is just laying back because they're either fearful or angry or whatever it is. We'll check the Baltimore murder rate. You got to.
Yeah, the high school graduation rate 2014 was 61%. And that was actually up 2% from the year before.
61% African American. What are the?
No, 61% overall.
Total.
Yeah.
Total. Does it break it down by race?
I can break it down for you in a second. Yeah.
All right. And in Brooklyn in the meantime. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm an elderly white Jewish lady who live in Crown Heights, Brooklyn.
And you work in undercover. Just kidding.
Oh, she hung up on you.
I'm sorry, man. It's just a joke. Here's Joel in New Jersey. What's up, Joel?
Yeah, I think.
And call me back, please, honey. It was just a joke. Go ahead, Joel.
I think that the statistics are a little bit screwy. I mean, for example, it's not unreasonable to think that the police department, the people that are working there are probably been on the force for 10 years, maybe 15 years. And so that's what the police force is made of. If you go back and look at the statistics of the population 10 years ago, you'll probably find that the white population was closer to 50% or even more. So what they're doing is they're looking at the population that's been on the police force for a good amount of time.
I think that's fair. I don't know statistically what percentage you're talking about, but I think that you're onto something. I think that it's fair to assume that because people stay on the job 20 years plus, that a lot of the reflection now in terms of the percentage of ethnicity or race is a function of the fact that different rules
tend
to figure.
I mean, you know, everything.
Very fair, very fair. I get you. Good point. Is John in Brooklyn? What are you thinking about, John?
Geraldo, this is a very clever move by the progressive movement once again in the city. This is about hiring black people that aren't qualified. I went through this in the 80s under the Dinkins administration and the Department of Corrections, okay? What they did was they flooded the department with unqualified blacks, that some of them were criminals, and just look 20 years later what Rikers Island is like.
Rikers Island looks like South Africa. It really
now
is.
Now, it sounds racist what I'm saying, but I'm being completely honest.
No, listen, it's not racist when you're reporting a fact, you know, so don't ever be shy about that.
It's a component today when you're honest that you're called either a racist or you're called a homophobic. But here's the issue, Geraldo. This is a jobs program for minorities that Dinkins, that de Blasio's come up with.
Was that a Freudian slip there, John?
It's one and the same. It's one and the same. It's the same agenda. I voted for Dinkins, and when he got in, I was shocked at how he changed. But this is not going to be good for New York City because they're going to lower the standards and get an investigator to call you up right now who investigates the applicant and let him tell you what they're letting on the job. You'll be shocked, Geraldo, because it's not what the media's portraying.
All right, John, I got it. We'll check out some of the allegations there. There are some, many black leaders coming public now angrily denouncing Commissioner Bratton's remarks, at least as reported. I'll give you the other side of the story and take your calls. I'm delighted so many of you interested in this topic. We have the most diverse police force in the nation still. Blacks are underrepresented fairly dramatically. Hispanics just represented about the number that we exist in town. Whites overrepresented. What's this all a function of? Is it a function of history? What are the impact? Is this about stop and frisk? Is this the unintended consequence of stop and frisk? Are we disabling too many African Americans from their ability to have jobs in the NYPD? What are the consequences of that? Is there this attitude, don't be with the man, be with the folks? You know, what's going on? 48 minutes after 10 o'clock.
Where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
Just off the topic a bit, you know that case in Texas, the McKinney, Texas, the, very agreeable place to live, McKinney, Texas. You had that beep, the kids acting out at that pool party at the cop. The corporal, Eric Casebolt, drawing his gun on one of these 15-year-old girls in a bikini. Anyway, he resigned yesterday when I was on the air. I was on The Five on the Fox News channel. Brian Watkins is an insightful criminal defense civil attorney. Before I get back to our topic on why so few black cops, Brian, do you think that this cop should have been forced to resign here?
Absolutely. I mean, he drew his gun out of anger, not out of any fear for his life or, threat against him. And that is absolutely something that he should be fired over. Put it in a different context, if a school police security guard or even a mall security guard dealt with unruly teens by pulling a weapon, you would want his job.
Brian Watkins, my guest, well-known attorney. Where's your base, Brian?
San Diego, California.
And how's business there?
It's busy.
So what do you see mostly?
You know, we see a lot of Hispanics because we have a very large Hispanic population. Also African Americans.
Why do so few black recruits join the police department in San Diego?
You know, that's a good question, and I don't know. Of course, we're not a major part of the population,
You're not LA.
General. Right, so you're not going to see large numbers, or at least percentage-wise.
But is there a feeling that the cops are the enemy, the bad guy, the army of occupation?
That is a phenomenon. That's part of our culture as African Americans because that was ingrained in us since the 60s, the 50s, the 60s. Our parents, cops were that. They were the people that kept blacks, the whites, and the colored separate. They did put that nightstick to you. They did turn those fire hoses on you. They turned them on my dad. So that's sort of ingrained into you as a child. Hey, watch out. When a cop does something, you know, you can get hurt here even if you're not doing nothing wrong. And so, yeah, I think that is something.
What about the theory that the New York police commissioner has that it's because so many young black men have criminal records?
Well, I'm sure a lot of them do in New York with that stop and frisk policy. The bottom line here
is, do you think stop and frisk could be responsible?
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to find crime where you look for crime. I mean, we know whites use drugs at even a higher rate than African Americans do, yet they suffer less drug convictions than African Americans. Why is that? Because if you're looking for crime in the African American community, you're going to find crime in the African American community.
Brian, well said. Don't be a stranger. Brian Watkins, a well-known criminal and civil attorney based in San Diego. We'll be back after this. 7 minutes after 11 o'clock. The Dow finally getting out of its miserable slump. It's up 195. Maybe it'll reverse the last couple of weeks of pretty depressing results. I want to get back to our topic. I think it's an important topic. Bill Bratton being accused of everything from being a bigot to being a blame passer now, our police commissioner, merely for pointing out that so many young black males have spent time in jail. They can't be hired by the NYPD. That's why the NYPD blacks on the force are underrepresented. Just 16% of the force, although the black population of the city is 23%. Whites are 33% of the city, 54% of the department. Hispanics, 28% of the city, 24% of the department. I want to get back to that and your calls at 866-ARALDO. Why is that? Who is who's responsible? What are the implications? Before I do, you listeners to this program, as far as I know, in the New York area, were first to get the tip that the person who allegedly, the insider who allegedly helped those two murderous dogs to escape upstate's Dannemora correctional facility, their Clinton correctional facility, the convicted murderers David Sweat, who killed a deputy, and Richard Matt, who killed two guys, dismembering one of them. Matt's supposedly the well-endowed Romeo, and you heard it here first that the person he romanced was Joyce Tilly Mitchell, allegedly, the lady in charge of the tailor shop where both Sweat and Matt worked. Now, you know, I could not figure, Noam, and I'm going to get back to the calls momentarily. How could they, because the search is all local, basically, within 30, 40 miles of the prison where they busted out. You know, how could they have this elaborate scheme to bust out of prison with power tools and so much and so forth and hiding the bricks and mortar that they had to cut through, the noise, all the rest of it? How could they have this elaborate scheme, including schematics of the city sewer system, so they knew where the manhole, you know, they could have punched out a manhole that was still inside the wall, for example. They didn't. They had it nailed. They got out. But why did they go to all that trouble and then not have a getaway car waiting for them to whisk them away in the hours before they were discovered missing, be out of the region, and therefore the dragnet couldn't get them? They couldn't circle the region. So it turns out that the theory is that the same lady, the tailor lady, this Joyce Tilly Mitchell, the 51-year-old married seamstress, got cold feet, that she was supposed to be the getaway driver. Instead, she checked herself into the local hospital with a case of nerves, quote-unquote.
Yeah, she claimed she was having a heart attack.
And was she having a heart attack because she was supposed to be in on this escape of the century here, this jailbreak from Dannemora? I found it fascinating. They're still at large, although they say they've been saying really since at least 4 or 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon that they had a bead on them, that the dogs had scented them. You know, maybe they're just hiding in those wet, miserable bushes with the black flies waiting someone to stumble on them, or maybe they have made good their escape somehow.
You know, they're going, what we've been told is this morning, a little bit of a different strategy. They're going home to home in Dannemora, which they did not do up till now. And they're going backyard to backyard, which they had not done now, too. So now that makes you think, whether they have a tip or not, they may believe that they haven't gotten far at all. They could just be a town or two away at most.
But you remember yesterday it was that Wolfboro, that little town 30 miles,
40 miles away. Yeah,
40 miles away. Now they're back to Dannemora. So it sounds like they don't really know where they are, other than the deep suspicion that they're still somewhere in the area. All right, back to the topic du jour about the, you know, the fact that the NYPD, although it is the most integrated force in the nation, is struggling to attract qualified black candidates because so many have criminal records, as Commissioner Bratton pointed out, and is taking the heat for it, pointing out in an interview he gave to The Guardian, a British newspaper. Bill in Brooklyn, okay, you're first up in the second hour. What's on your mind, buddy? Thanks for calling. Hello, Bill?
Hello?
Hi, Bill, you're on. What's on your mind, buddy?
Yeah, hi, Geraldo.
Yes, sir, that's me.
Yeah, listen, Geraldo, I'm in from Brooklyn. Let's say this young black man graduates the police academy, and he goes home to Marcy Houses, or he goes home to Van Dyke Houses. Man, that's like throwing Bruce Jenner into a room of 100 men that just got out of solitary confinement. Who wants to be in that situation?
That's a vivid analogy there, Bill.
Thank you for, I could see you visualizing it now.
My mind is working feverishly, but I appreciate the call. Your point,
yeah,
of course,
it's that
your
he's point is that by young men that have already been in trouble. He's not to be, never mind, ostracized, you know.
All right, I got you. It makes a sad sense. Richard in the Bronx, what's up, Richard?
Hey, Geraldo, African-American, retired NYPD.
Welcome aboard.
You know, unfortunately, it's sad for me to say, but the African-American community is a mess. We've embraced liberal policies and liberal ideology that, you know, our unemployment is through the roof. Education is horrible. You have a breakdown of the family. So you get what you get. Not too many. First of all, a lot of African-American males, even when I was a cop, I used to listen, why don't you guys join the force? I don't want to be no cop. They only want to be a cop, well, a lot of them.
So why did you want to be a cop, Richard? Why did you want to be a cop?
Well, I wanted to be a cop because, listen, I had a good parents. I come from a very strong family. My brother was a cop. I went to Catholic school with the Cardinal Hayes right on the concourse. And, you know, I wanted to help people, and I figured I would do that. And I had a good father who said, listen, go to college, but take all these city tests while you're at it. And that's what happened. I mean, I just want to make one other point about the guy in Texas. I'm so sorry that the guy resigned. I don't think people should be regulating when a cop is going to be taking his gun out.
You never would have drawn your gun under that circumstance, Richard. You never would have.
You know what, Geraldo? When you feel yourself being surrounded in a chaotic situation and people are behind you, trying to or attempting to jump you, yeah, because at the end of the day, Geraldo, we want to go home at any cost. I'd rather go to trial and deal with 12 people than be in a casket with the helicopters going over and the bagpipes going on.
I don't take a backseat to anybody when it comes to the need, and I appreciate your call and your service to the city, Richard. To the need to put yourself in a cop's shoes before you judge their actions. I think that's what all of these grand juries that are refusing to indict, all these juries that are acquitting, that's what they are doing successfully. They're putting themselves in the cop's shoes and say, wait a second, under those circumstances, I would have reacted that way too. I would have drawn the gun. I would have taken the shot. I would have kept shooting, whatever it is. You know, the juries put themselves in the cop's shoes, but you put yourself in this cop's shoes, this cop in Texas, in McKinney, Texas, Eric Casebolt. These were children. These were not in any way. They were naked children. I mean, basically with bikinis on, you know, you could have done it. And he resigned for a good reason. He's sparing his department a lot of unnecessary embarrassment. I you agree, right?
I think so. Yeah, watching that video. Of course, we don't have the
hard
whole video.
Look.
We only have portions of it. But still, you get
children.
A sense of what was going on.
They were children. Paul in New York, thank you for calling, buddy. What's up? Hello, Paul.
Yes. I'm a retired lieutenant from the NYPD. I worked for a while in the recruitment unit. And the other thing, as far as the qualified candidates, black candidates, if you got a young guy and he squared away and he went to college and he doesn't want to be a cop. He's got so many other opportunities in the private sector. So that skews the numbers too.
That's an excellent point. Let me just stay there, Paul. Don't go away. When I adopted my class and I went to put them through college and I said I'd pay their college, they graduated from a high school in East Harlem, Spanish Harlem. Graduating high school in Spanish Harlem, those kids have a lot of scholarship opportunities, particularly in state schools. So it's almost like some of them didn't even need my particular money. There are, once you bust through, that the, you know, have women, they say, have a glass ceiling. I think minorities have the ceiling is a high school diploma. You get into college, you have a high school diploma, you're going to get into a college someplace, and if you do reasonably well, you're going to have a lot of career options. And what's the starting salary, Lieutenant? Do you remember right now, more or less? What's a cop get paid?
A cop gets paid about, I think, 40 grand now. It might be a little less in the police academy, and then they get a raise when they get out of the police academy. But, it's not really that good a job.
Initially. It becomes a good job, but it's not as an entry-level job, particularly if you got college. It's not great. That's about what I pay the nanny for Seoul. I mean, it's a good job, $20 an hour, basically, plus overtime. It's okay for a nanny, but for a cop, it becomes a good job. You know, you get promotions. So,
But then one of your prior callers made an excellent point, too. Yes, there is a certain amount of, stigmatism. If you come in, out of
it. So did you feel that vibe when you were in the police academy, when you were recruiting, that they just said, you really don't want to wear blue?
Oh, yeah, there was tremendous. They'd rather, work in there. In any of the, if they're real squared away, they want to work in a private, industry, they go to Wall Street, they can go to, all of those places actively recruit also minority candidates. So, when we're out there trying to get, the black population to be in the police department, they're being recruited by, major corporations.
So you don't buy what the commissioner said about the police records?
That skews the numbers, too. Yes, there's been the RAND report that 25% of male blacks are in some kind of, correctional supervision, whether it's parole, probation, they've been in the system. That will skew the numbers,
Right. Okay, Lieutenant, thanks for your service and thanks for calling. I've got to take a break. 19 after 11 o'clock, I shall return.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
26 after 11 o'clock. Why don't we have enough black cops? Is it because, as the commissioner is quoted as saying, so many black youngsters have criminal records, so they are disqualified from becoming recruits? Or is it the bad vibes that exist between the African-American community and the police? Is that the reason behind the lack of proportional representation, put it that way? What is Tony saying? White Plains. Thanks, Tony, for calling. What's up? What's on your mind?
Yeah, Geraldo. I bet you millions of people that listen to talk radio or keep up with the news, they can relate to what I'm saying. This all goes back, started around in the 1970s. With the affirmative action, the busing, and all that kind of crap. There was a man on a radio, and I know you don't like him, but he was a real king of talk radio, Bob Grant. He predicted all of this.
What do you mean I don't like him? I always liked Bob Grant.
I don't know. You had a little conflict there with him. But
we didn't always agree on issues, but go ahead.
Okay, but
that's different than like, but go ahead, Tom.
He predicted all of this stuff. Then came the Stinkin' Dinkins days. You remember those days, don't you?
Very well.
12, 13, 14-year-old black girls having babies, crack babies, welfare babies. Now, all those kids are grown up, and their parents are still active, too. Those are part of the problems you're dealing with now, the gangs and all this other stuff going on. And I'm surprised you don't even talk about this as serious yourself. Then you got Mason, Maddox, Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, O.J., Farrakhan, all that ilk with the Tawana Brawley thing and all of that. Don't you think all of that fits into all this stuff? I mean,
well, you also have Barack Obama as president. Right. You have African Americans attaining great levels of achievement in certain areas. You've got a mixed bag, Tony. Stuck in the past.
It's such a racist country. How could they achieve all that stuff?
Well, I'm not saying it's a racist country, am I? I'm asking you why don't we have more black cops? Okay, I got it. Disgruntled there. Al, what's up in Morristown? What's on your mind, buddy?
Yeah, Brad is wrong. It's not the criminal record. You can have a criminal record to get on the police department. The standards have been lowered so dramatically that, well, in many cases, a felony will stop you. A misdemeanor will not.
Right. A felony is an automatic exclusion. A misdemeanor, you can appeal it.
No, it's not an automatic exclusion. However, most felonies are plea bargained down to misdemeanors. And also, the standards have been lowered so much to get women on the police department as well as blacks that there is no more physical. There's a medical, but there is no more physical. It used to be you had to lift and do 7 chin-ups, lift up 50 pounds with a barbell to do chin-ups and run an obstacle course. That's all gone. So the standards have been lowered for blacks and for women. But the reason why you don't have enough blacks anymore is the same reason that black students get harassed if they get good marks for being white. It's a bad thing to do, to be a cop or get good grades.
All right. I got that. I read you. Let me take a couple more here. Rich in White Plains, what's up?
I'm sorry, Geraldo. I heard you say Barack Obama and great achievements in the same sentence, and I'm still trying to get over that one. But with regard to the cop who resigned, I don't blame him for getting thrown under the bus. First, they're trying to tell the cops when to discharge their weapon. Now they're trying to tell them if they should or not. And I don't know what you saw in that video, but I saw somebody charge at that cop to the point where he was just a couple of feet away.
All right, I got it, Rich.
Geraldo, live, local. Today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
With the Army and proud of our name. With the Army and proudly proclaim. First to fight for the right and to build the nation's might. And the Army goes rolling along. Proud of all we have done, fighting till the battle's won. And the Army goes rolling along. And it's high, high day, the Army's on its way.
He's had a remarkable career in the United States Army. He started with commanding the Cavalry Division Artillery. I met him when he commanded the 4th ID in Iraq. It was his guys, the men and women who got Saddam Hussein in that rabbit hole he was in. That's when he had 2 stars. Then he went on to command 3 Corps with 3 stars. Now he's a 4-star general who is the chief of staff of the Army, the second highest rated Army officer in the land, second only to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Martin Dempsey. General Ray Odierno will be joining us live right here in the studio. We're going to celebrate the Army's birthday together tomorrow and talk about ISIS and the, you know, how do we defeat the savages, the Sunni Muslim extremist savages who are cutting people's heads off, exterminating Christians and so forth. So General Ray Odierno will be our special guest tomorrow. All right, so back to you all and what's happening here. We have the commissioner of police in New York, Bill Bratton, suggesting that many black men cannot become cops because they spent time in jail, so they can't be hired. That's why we don't have enough black police officers in the NYPD. The NYPD, though, as you know, the most integrated police force, I think, maybe in the land for a big city. But Dennis, let's go to Dennis first in New Jersey. What's up, Dennis?
Hey, good morning, Geraldo. My name is Dennis, and I disagree with the commissioner. You know, and I'm speaking for myself because, like I said, I'm a Newark police officer. I'm recovering from a gunshot wound.
You got shot in Newark? Goodness. Tell us a little bit about what happened, Dennis.
I was working. It happened last summer. I was working, and a call came in. Back up a fellow officer, a captain, and an armed robbery in progress. I responded, and lo and behold, in a chaotic situation, you know, suspect got a round off, and he got me. But I'm good. I'm alive. I'm healthy. My spirit is good. You know, he didn't get the best of me. But, you know, getting back to the subject, although I disagree, again, due to the fact that I have 3 sons.
First of all, thank you for your service, and I'm glad you're faring okay, Dennis. Let me just say that.
But, you know, I raised 3 sons on my own for the last 15 years. I lost their mother to cancer, and they all went to public school here in Newark. okay, born and raised. And the main thing, I think, what's going on in today's society, parents are losing reality with their kids. When my kids were growing up, I made sure they brought their friends to my house. I wanted to know who they were, what they do, who they hang out with, okay? I was on top of them. And guess what? Two out of my three sons are police officers, and my third son, he went to college, he got his degree. He's a chemical engineer. Where did I go wrong? What's wrong with today's society? Why can't people, adults, accept responsibility when they bring their kids into this society? It's their responsibility. They got to raise them. You got to stop making excuses for these people.
So bring that back to this notion of why there aren't enough black cops. Why do you think it's their parents? So what's your main line, Anton?
Unfortunately, a lot of these kids, you know, they have troubled youths. It's like, you know, if you've been arrested, it makes it that much harder for you to get on the job. That, you know, once you've been arrested, it's very tough to get on any police department, not just New York or Newark, any police department.
When are you going to be back, you think?
I'm not sure, Geraldo. Not yet. I'm still in recovery. I might have to have surgery again. But
that's
I'm doing good.
Well, take care of yourself. And again, I thank you very much for what you're trying to do in Newark and elsewhere. I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Dennis. Okay,
got it.
Carlos in the Bronx. What's up, Carlos? Thanks for holding on. What's up?
Hey, how are you, my friend? Listen, I agree with the last caller, but I also want to talk about something that you can relate to. The police department has a branding problem. The police department is a brand, just like any other major corporation, which they are, you know, but they patrol. So if they would understand that in order to up their brand, in order for them to become a better police department, they need to renew their brand. The branding companies that, you know, that renew UPS, Chase Bank. In other words, when you're stuck in the past, you have to bring your brand up. So if they do a branding campaign, that means like advertising, that means like, you know, speaking to the people.
It's not a bad idea. I like that. I mean,
it really is, because even the uniforms are a brand. The way they speak to people is a brand. So what's happening is that their whole system is fragmented by different people speaking. They have to speak as a brand so that they then up their profile. Right now, you know, with all that's happening in this country, the police brand really is at the bottom, is on the toilet bowl. So if they take it to the – and I work for a branding company. That's why I'm speaking about brand. So I understand that when you have a company that really is faltering, that's not speaking or that's not bringing it up. So that's where you come with your recruitment, is the brand. How do you recruit? How do you go into the neighborhoods and recruit? It's that brand that you have to.
You got to make it cool to be a cop again. That's what you got to do. I hear you, Carlos. I gotta go. I got a special guest coming up. Thank you for the call, Smart Calls. Special guest. Going to talk about the great King James, LeBron James, what he did with the Cleveland Cavaliers. This guest, a former colleague of mine.
Really? From where?
From WABC.
Huh.
Later went to ESPN. He's got a great story to tell about ESPN. I can't tell you anymore, but he will be joining us shortly.
77 WABC. Traffic and transit.
The center tube of the Lincoln Tunnel is still shut down going into the city because of an earlier bus accident. So far, delays are about an hour, and they stretch southward along the New Jersey Turnpike to Secaucus Road. The northward delays are headed along Route 3, and they're beyond the New Jersey Turnpike. Then in Newark, on the Turnpike extension eastbound before the Newark Bay Bridge, there is an accident here. Traffic is stacking up from the toll plaza. The New Jersey Turnpike car lanes, the outer roadway southbound after the Goffles Bridge. There's an accident on the left shoulder. That has traffic backed up to North Boulevard. And the BQE is southbound at the Kosciuszko Bridge. There is a stalled vehicle that's blocking off the right lane, but that incident that's also southbound at the LIE, that one has cleared. However, delays do remain heavy from Queens Boulevard. And the Long Island Expressway westbound off-ramp to Oceana Street, that one is still shut down by an accident that has traffic stop and go from Springfield Boulevard. And looking at the subways in Brooklyn, police activity at Sutter Avenue is slowing down service for the eastbound L train. conditions. Checking the forecast from Channel 7's Bill Evans, it's 76 degrees, sunny outside. It's going to stay sunny today with highs up to 83. Tonight, we could see a few clouds, overnight lows at 68, and then tomorrow things really heat up, 90 for the high. Our next report in about 15 minutes, Angela Chase, right now traffic on 77 WABC.
I wish these bags under my eyes would just go away. If that sounds like you every morning, you're not alone. Bags and puffiness under the eyes, a problem for millions of us, American men and women, until now. Now there's Genucel Serum with plant stem cell technology from Chamonix. Here's one of the many testimonials Chamonix gets weekly from their website. Susan from Jersey writing, I've been using Genucel for a couple of months. The puffiness around my eyes is gone. Even the crow's feet, small lines have disappeared, have not come back. I love your product. I use it under my eyes, around my cheekbones, and on my eyelids. Not only Susan, folks, I use it. I love it. Where's my Genucel, Marty? With its instant effects, you'll see results. If you use the Genucel in the first 12 hours of your money back, I guarantee it. Order now. Chamonix will double your supply of Genucel immediate effects, absolutely free. You get your Genucel by calling 800-525-4974, 800-525-4974. Genucel works. It's guaranteed of your money back. Order now. Chamonix will include a free luxury gift just for the summer. 800-525-4974. 800-525-4974.
You're a business owner. You know how it goes. Money comes in, money goes out. But when there's a cash flow hiccup, you need a little help. Get the working capital you need right when you need it at Sign on the Line Capital. Even when your bank says no, Sign on the Line can say yes. Payroll glitch? No problem. Need new equipment? No problem. We've helped thousands of business owners with fast help and flexible repayment plans. If you've been in business for at least 6 months and have monthly sales of $20,000 or more, we can get you approved for up to $250,000 in just 12 hours. No collateral, no application fees, and less than perfect credit is okay. Get your cash in as little as 2 to 3 days. It's fast, easy, and painless. So call now, 800-658-1090. That's 800-658-1090. 800-658-1090.
When you need it on time, Sign on the Line,
Hi, I'm Greg Miner. As the founder of a small business, I know firsthand how difficult it can be to manage through cash flow problems. When I tried to borrow money, the banks wouldn't touch me, and I got a lot of fast talk from loan brokers. That's why we founded Merchant Capital Source 10 years ago, to help small business owners like you get the funding you need without getting the runaround. We'll fund your business from $5,000 to $200,000, and because we're a direct lender, there's no middleman to cause delays or cost you money. If you've been in business for 6 months and have sales of at least $15,000 per month, we can approve you within hours and put cash in your account within 3 days. The process is fast and easy, and the best part is that no tax returns, financial statements, or business plans are necessary. Experience the Merchant Capital Source difference and get cash for your business today.
Apply online at mcscash.com or call 800-943-6691. That's 800-943-6691. 800-943-6691. Loans made or arranged pursuant to a California Finance Lenders Law License.
77 WABC.
It's getting better all the time.
Hi, I'm Laura Smith, and this is Living Better on the Go. Today, my guest is Dr. Hans Schmidt, bariatric surgeon at Hackensack University Medical Center, ranked as a top four New York metro area hospital and number one in New Jersey by U.S. News & World Report. Dr. Schmidt, I know that bariatric surgery has become much more mainstream these days. What is a comprehensive bariatric center, and why is it important for a patient to go to one?
Typically, patients seek care for their weight through medical means. They try diet and exercise. They can go to fitness centers or even medications to help them lose weight. Patients that don't do well on the medical therapy often on their own seek care from a surgeon to help them lose weight in that way. We at Hackensack UMC offer a comprehensive center with the medical and the surgical wings of the treatment under one roof. So the patient can see our board-certified medical bariatrician, be put into a comprehensive exercise, diet, and behavioral modification program to help them lose weight on their own. And should they succeed, they have a positive outcome. Should they be less successful with the medical track, they can be easily referred over to the surgeons at the center and then be enrolled in the surgical wing of the program to help them lose weight through bariatric surgery. Similarly, patients that have bariatric surgery with less success can be re-referred into the medical tract to help with their overall weight. The Comprehensive Center at Hackensack UMC provides world-class medical and surgical care for the treatment of morbid obesity.
To learn more about bariatric surgery and if you are a candidate, go to HackensackUMC.org. That's HackensackUMC.org. This has been Laura Smith with Living Better on the Go.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866 Geraldo, 77 WABC.
And the people watched in wonder how they laugh and how they cheer. And there used to be a ballpark right here.
Sinatra, a ballpark right here. Just before I leave the topic to tell you why we're playing Sinatra and that nostalgia and there used to be a ballpark, I just have to say to Commissioner Bratton, if you are hearing my voice, you know me, I know you. You have a lovely wife and a great record. Whatever you do, don't let them drive you out of that job. You know, you could have been more elegant in the way you said so many of them have spent time in jail, and as such, we can't hire them. But that was a slip of the tongue or a misquote or whatever. I'll buy your explanation. There is a problem with minority recruiting, and it's a lot bigger than you. Don't go away. There used to be a ballpark right here. There used to be a sportscaster right next to me. Sal Marciano, one of the greats. Visiting up, actually lives here in the summer, down in Florida, is that it?
Yeah,
welcome.
Good to see you, Geraldo. I split my year Boca Raton in Manhattan.
Not too shabby. You look very healthy.
Thank you. I'm in my sixth year of retirement.
Your sixth year of retirement.
Yeah.
And what do you do?
I play a lot of golf. Okay.
Are you any good at it?
No, I'm getting better, which was, it's really more important to get better.
You know? You've been practicing for 6 years, I hope so.
I play twice a week with good buddies down there, and you know what? No one ever masters the game. Derek Jeter right now is trying to learn how to play golf. Ledbetter, who was one of the great teachers, was on the radio, another network, and he was saying that Derek is applying himself because he wants to master the game. And Ledbetter said to Derek, no one masters golf. You just get better.
What about Michael Jordan? He became a great golfer, didn't he?
Yes, he's an excellent golfer. His problem is that he can't stop gambling against other people. And I know a story. Your listeners will enjoy this. Keegan Bradley, one of the top pros, played for St. John's. Okay, he's a buddy of Michael Jordan's down in Florida. A friend of mine is an assistant pro at their golf club, and they always compete against each other for some money. One day, Michael Jordan said to Keegan Bradley, "Let's play for $100,000." So they played, and Keegan Bradley fired a 61.
Okay? No way!
And he beats Michael Jordan for $100,000. So the next day, Keegan Bradley texts Jordan and said, "Aha, I kicked your butt yesterday." And Jordan replied, "That's true, but you're wearing Air Jordans and I'm not wearing Air Bradleys."
He had the 100 grand to spare.
Exactly.
So did you see the Preakness? Did you see American Pharoah win? What do you think of Victor Espinosa?
It was thrilling. And I was there at Belmont 37 years ago when a firm won. I was hosting friends. And, you know, I have very fond memories of those years. There were several great races. Saturday was just tremendous. And I have to point out that the jockey, Victor Espinosa, has donated his earnings to cancer research for children. I mean, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's wrong in sports these days, but that's right. I mean, that's just an amazing, amazing thing. And really a big cheer for Victor Espinosa.
I mentioned Michael Jordan. Absolutely. It was charming to meet him. He's a great, great guy. And I was kind of sad, although he seemed all right with it, to be like labeled a stud. LeBron James, Michael Jordan, who's better?
We still have a ways to go. Michael Jordan is still the number one guy, but LeBron James, we are looking at perhaps the greatest player ever once his time is done.
Ever in the history of basketball. Ever. I agree. LeBron James. Sal Marciano. So nice to see you.
From Eyewitness News.
Eyewitness News. See you right here tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everybody.